Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
In the meantime, I want to talk about our two guests who've just joined us in the studio. Welcome. They've combined 80 years in weather forecasting and meteorology. And the two guests, they've come together to write an educational biography of sorts on Ireland's weather and climate. Evelyn Cusick, welcome.
Thanks, Oliver.
And Seamus Walsh is here as well.
Thanks, Oliver.
Researcher. What's the name of the book, by the way? You have to check as well. Yeah. They say it might rain.
Yeah,
Evelyn, it deals with everything here, but your history is you grew up on a farm, didn't you, where the weather was very, very...
No, I grew up in a village. I was a villager, yeah. Clonisley, big shout out to Laois. But my parents had, you know, come from farming stock, so they were always, so
always
on about the
heads.
Weather. Like, we'd go down to Rackyew, up to Kinnity every Sunday and admire the hedgerows, and they were always on about the silage and all that. But my earliest memories of the weather is my father topping the barometer every morning, of
very
course, to see if it was rising or falling. But then, of course, looking at the weathermen on RT television, the only show in town, black and white, one station. You know, the kids saying, how did you change channels when you'd no remote? We only had one station.
There's nothing to change
so
to.
The weathermen were sort of the rock stars of the day. But, you know, I had no ambition to
be a
weatherman.
Do you remember any of them?
Who was? Oh, yeah. On my first day in the Irish Meteorological Service, I couldn't believe my eyes. There was Paddy McHugh and Michael Gilligan, because they really were the rock stars of the day.
And all the glamour fell down for you.
After 5 minutes, yeah.
You studied, and Seamus, you studied physics as well.
Yeah, we both studied physics, but on the...
So you met?
No. I studied physics in Trinity,
Evelyn
was in UCD. So we didn't actually meet until...
Met
service shortly before me, and I joined a few months later, and we more or less did our formative training years together in Galway in the early 1980s.
With Joan Blackburn.
This was the Met Service training school in Galway. So that's where you met each other. Was teaching then in your life, and you move into physics, and why was weather then you decided to kind of specialise in?
Well, as I said, I had no ambitions to be a weatherman, but I was doing a master's in UCD with Shea O'Connor in spectroscopy, which has nothing really to do with the weather.
In which?
Spectroscopy, the study of spectra. Very interesting. And a colleague, Aidan Nulty, was doing a PhD in spectroscopy, and he just got a job with the Irish Met Service. And he said, Evelyn, you might like that as well. So we got the form and we filled it in together. And I actually did the interview and got the job, and it was the only interview I ever did. So, and then 42 years later, here I am.
Very lucky.
Yeah, it was very lucky. Yeah,
I love this when you're working in Shannon Airport. What's happening in Shannon Airport?
Well, in those days, of course, you know, some listeners will remember the Shannon stopover. That all of the transatlantic flights arriving or emanating from Ireland had to stop at Shannon. Mm-hmm. And Shannon, historically, when the Irish Met Service, that's where it was founded and set up to service the old flying boats that went from Foynes in those days to a place called Botwood in Newfoundland.
Amazing.
And of course, that continued on into the late 1980s, the Shannon stopover. So the Shannon was the heart of forecasting
Europe.
In Ireland.
Yeah.
For transatlantic flights, and it was also the headquarters in the beginning of the Irish Met Service, and up till the 1980s and into the 1990s, that was still the case. So to get a good grounding in forecasting, once you finished your theoretical training in Galway, you were dispatched to Shannon Airport, where you spent maybe a year, maybe 2 years, just learning and talking to pilots crossing the Atlantic. And in those days, the pilots would be able to physically come into the office.
Literally come into the office. And
very dashing they were too, yes.
Well, so one person says.
This was the glory days of pilots in particular, where they were real superstars.
Well, Seamus pointed out that I actually used the word dashing in three places in the book.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Okay. But the pilots would physically come into the room and they'd ask you, what's the weather
incredible,
doing?
Incredible, yeah.
So what they would literally be...
Well, they might look and say, well, where's the jet stream? Where are the strongest winds going to be? And, you know, what's the weather like over Greenland? And they threw out these names of obscure airports because they're flying around the place all the time.
Very intimidating for young meteorologists.
Well, yeah. I mean, and every morning at about 11 o'clock in the morning, the flights would cross the Atlantic, and there was a transatlantic briefing that the pilots would ring at this time every morning, and there was a coffee break around that time, and we used to pray, let us be on our coffee break when they ring.
There was also a direct phone line to forecasters from members of the public, people who would go out hot air ballooning or paragliding and the like. And
they were doing everything,
service.
Oliver. They could be doing anything, you know, swimming, scuba diving, you name it, they were doing absolutely everything.
How do we get this back?
Actually, they loved when Paddy McHugh used to answer the call because
because they knew him off the telly. But people literally would be ringing, I'm getting married, what time of the day tomorrow would be good to get the photograph?
Well, no, not tomorrow, in 6 months.
6 months?
Or in a year, okay. Yes.
And we would say, well, is it in the morning or the afternoon?
And they'd say, oh, can you tell that far? No, sorry. We still can't.
Months out. Months
yeah, we still can't. And maybe we never will.
Oh, God. You were there to spot the first women coming through.
Yeah, my namesake, Evelyn Murphy, which is very confusing that there's actually, it's like the 46A bus, one comes along and then another one comes along. Two Evelyns. So Evelyn Murphy was the trailblazer, but she didn't really like the publicity or whatever, and she left after 3 years.
In comes another Evelyn.
She headed up the marine unit and put in weather boys and all that. But the funniest thing, I think either Evelyn's father or grandfather had a pub in Galway, Murphy's Pub in Shop Street. It's quite a famous
beautiful pub. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So a member of the public came in and said, oh, I see your daughter got married. And he said, Mr. Murphy said, no. He said, she did. She married a Mr. Cusack.
So it was the two Evelyns. Did you get along?
It was just very confusing. Yeah, yeah. But you know, at work, like we were very different because Evelyn is a lovely, tall person. And as you know, I'm a bit of a squirt.
Don't
so,
be saying things about
no,
yourself.
There you go, yeah.
You'd be kind to yourself.
But anyway, Evelyn's happily retired like myself and she is an artist now and paints ice landscapes. So
still obsessed with the weather.
Still obsessed with the weather, yeah.
One of the lovely chapters of the book, Weather Lore and Signs from Nature.
Oh, yeah.
These are things now everyone loves. When the swallows fly high, the weather will be dry. All these various... Is that true?
Yeah, well, it's kind of true. It's more like, not that the weather will be dry, it's more that the weather is dry. So the swallows, you know, when the weather is dry or sunny, the insects rise higher in the air, so the swallows are up higher. All they're doing is foraging to try and, you know,
have their dinner.
Live their happy lives and procreate. And then if it's windy, of course, they're lower down because the insects are lower down.
And they're caught under the eaves of the building. Yeah. So they're responding to current conditions. Now, the problem is that very occasionally a fine day in Ireland is followed by a few more. Now, it doesn't happen too often. Yeah. So then the people would say, the swallows knew it was going to be fine
because they were flying.
They were just reacting to what's happening.
They're not forecasting for us.
No.
But when the pressure affects them, they go low to the ground.
Yeah, because the insects are gone low.
But that's all
they're
the only
following
reason
their
they're
dinner.
There.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So we kind of know this is the weather for the day, really.
Yeah, because you know that yourself. You can see the sun shining.
The oak before the ash, there will only be a splash. But the ash before the oak, there will be a soak. This is to do with the blooming, the flowers blooming.
Not much in that, really, other than, if it's... You know, you can't really draw much from that because even reading it and trying to make sense of it, it's hard enough to do without using
the oak blooms in the spring.
No, but definitely
it gets its leaf before the ash.
Yeah, no, but definitely in the country there was this thing about, you know, when there's a lot of berries on the autumnal hedges, that's a sign of Mother Nature looking out for the poor little birdies for a harsh winter ahead. No. It means that there was a very good growing season and the spring was very good. You know, but occasionally...
There's been no frost, really, doesn't it, in spring? And just the berries have done loads of summer.
It might just happen that following such a spring, an abundant spring, there is a harsh winter. But it's really just happenstance. There's
it's
no
reacting
kind of,
to what's already happened. Yeah. It's not going to forecast.
It's not going to forecast it, no.
What's the phrase causation?
The difference between correlation and causation.
Causation, yeah.
And the one everyone talks about, red sky at night, shepherd's delight, or it could be sailor's delight, red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning.
Well, there's definitely truth in that. And that's got to
finally.
Do with, yes, finally, yes. Well, what it means is, you know, that when the sky is red, it means there are dust particles in the air that haven't been kind of washed out by rain. So in at night in the western sky, a lot of our weather would come from the west.
Oh, of course.
So if there's dust particles in the air, it means they basically haven't been washed out by approaching rain. So the dust particles then make the sunrise seem redder because they diffract and they scatter.
The sunset, the lovely, beautiful red sunset shows that there's lovely weather behind it. But if we see a red sky in the morning in the east,
it means that the fine weather's gone to the east, which normally the weather goes from west to east, but not always. I'll give you the exception.
So we could be watching the end of lovely weather.
Yes. But also there might be fine weather in the east and the red sunrise could be due to industrial haze coming in from Europe, or say a volcanic eruption. And that's where Turner got all his lovely red sunsets and sunrises. It was nothing to do with the weather.
It was industrial revolution.
Volcanic ash from
Mount Tambora. It was a major volcanic eruption, Mount Tambora, I think 1815 or 16. Mm. And for 2 years, that winter or the year after was called the year without a summer, because there was so much dust in the air that depressed the temperatures and it caused famines across the world.
Yeah, and
this is where Turner paints his famous sunsets, because there was so much dust in the air.
But you're destroying all the proverbs and the art. Even Turner,
with
your science and your facts.
I know. Facts is facts.
Damn those facts.
Listen, we're watching this horrendous weather unfold in Jamaica, and I think in Ireland they're kind of... We always go, well, that's us now doomed for the coming week. We'll have terrible tail end of this.
Well, I thought you might ask that, so I rang Jerry Murphy this morning.
Because you don't have access, do you?
Yeah, but I wouldn't dream of giving you a forecast. I'm retired. I like to let the professionals do it. But
I suppose this is another myth in our heads, isn't it? That we hear a hurricane over the Caribbean.
No.
Does it guarantee to be coming here?
Not always. But first of all, on the hurricane, the sea temperature is about 30 degrees Celsius in the Caribbean. So our heart goes out to the people
very
of Jamaica.
High.
I mean, it's absolutely desperate. And this is a direct result of global warming and burning fossil fuels.
They always say that you can't really tell that
these high sea temperatures has been attributed directly. Now, to answer your question, Jerry told me, and we looked at some charts, that it's going to move then over Cuba and then move out into the Atlantic Ocean and engage with the jet stream. But at the moment, it looks like it will be heading away to the northeast of Ireland.
Northwest,
Scotland and Iceland. But Jerry will be on tonight now, so watch him after the 9 o'clock news.
And he knows they'll be watching.
And of course, we technically never actually had a hurricane in Ireland, because it weakens by the time...
Well, we don't really call them hurricanes when they get here. We do have kind of, you know... Mm-hmm. What happens with the hurricanes is they're a special way in which it forms over really, really warm oceans. Yeah. And the physical process by which they develop there is different to what we get. But they have loads of energy, and some of this energy transforms into the normal type of storms we get here. So, for example, Ophelia, which was a hurricane until quite
six
close
hours,
to our
six
shore.
Hours six hours from Ireland.
Was technically, when it reached us, it was no longer a hurricane. It was what we call a mid-latitude storm. Sorry to use a technical term, but that's what we'd call it here.
There was one in 1961, Debbie, and that originated down near the Canaries. Yeah. And, of course, there was absolutely no warning. And, you know, it caused a lot of death as it moved up to the Canaries, the Cape Verdes. And did a huge amount of destruction on the west, from Kerry up through Galway, Sligo and Donegal.
And it hit us as a hurricane.
Not technically, because our sea temperatures are only about 18. But it wiped out... There was a huge glasshouse industry in Donegal at the time, growing tomatoes and everything, and it flattened them all. But thankfully now, hopefully, we can give about 2, 3, 4 days' notice of these storms. I mean, as recently as 1979, the Fastnet storm blew up unexpectedly.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, was it... it's almost 100 years ago, there was a desperate storm.
Yeah, on this day, actually, in 1927, there was a major storm, and it affected most over the west coast, and 45 people lost their lives
with no warning whatsoever.
Yeah. So, that's a sign how far we've come. Even though the forecasts aren't perfect, we're still saving a lot of lives.
Storm could not possibly creep up unexpectedly.
Well, hopefully.
Well, hopefully not.
Yeah. I mean,
it's technically possible.
We can never say never, Oliver. I suppose that's the best way. But the forecasts are so much better than they were even when we started.
And you deal with this in the book as well, don't you? The future
chaos
technologies.
And all that. AI.
I'm amazed by the data that's coming out of things like lawnmowers and windscreen wipers, phones, all sorts of devices
when
now.
Because when you have
that's
your windscreen wiper on,
yes,
it means
it has a rain sensor.
Unless you're trying to clean your windscreen.
Yeah. And the windscreen wipers turn themselves on. So there's some technology which knows that it's raining. So all of this information from smart devices will be used to aid very, very localized short term forecasts. And that's kind of
Weather stations everywhere almost,
yeah,
is it?
More or less everywhere.
Yeah.
And AI and big data will be able to analyse all the data.
AI
is much better.
Faster at collating all the bits of data, is it?
And will produce cheaper forecasts and quicker. But it will still springboard from the current physics-led models. So it's going to be like a collaboration.
So long as we can still hear from the humans, we'd be okay.
On RT weather.
No AI, yes. No AI presenters. No. It's a fascinating thing. I love someone saying that with a dear neighbour and friend back in the day, she would blame the weatherman. Paddy McHugh, he's all showers.
Yeah.
That's Liz in North Cork.
Or somebody suggested that was for a title for the book, Will There Be Rain Between the Showers?
Yeah, my neighbours were giving me advice. We wanted to call it Ireland's Weather, A Journey Through Time, and said, oh my God, that's so boring.
Thank God the publisher is
going to do it.
They say it might rain, the highs and lows of Ireland's weather and climate. It's published by Gill. It's out now. Evelyn Cusick and Seamus Walsh, thank you both so much.
And
thank you, Oliver.
Thanks so much.
Safe travels in the weather.
Yeah, thank you.
Email oliver@rte.ie.